If you are anti-American, if you want to prevent Europe being sold up by the American corporations, you have to stop your class struggle. You have to submit to concentration of capital, to rationalization of capitalist industry in Western Europe. You must assist the development of big international European combines, private combines, because they are the only way from a technical point of view, from a financial point of view, in the framework of the capitalist system, to efficiently oppose American competition. Either you will submit to the rules of the European capitalists, you will abandon your trade union rights, you will allow a lowering of your standard of living, of your wage rates, and a big increase in the rate of profit in Western Europe, or you will be colonized by American capital. That's the essence of the message of Servan Schreiber. That will be one of the contents. This can be foreseen today very clearly. That will be one of the contents of the campaign which a left government, anti-Gaullist government, if it would be elected in France, would use in order to domesticate the trade union movement. And if Wilson has not used the same argument in Britain in the same efficient way, it is not because he is more stupid, but because in the specific relationship between British and American capitalism, he is not allowed the Americans cracking the whip here more strongly than they do on the European continent. He's not allowed to use this kind of polemics which the European, some of the European capitalists at least, are capable today of employing. Needless to say to the comrades here assembled, that if the European working class movement would accept this kind of dilemma, either you abandon your class struggle or you become colonized by American capitalism, it would fall into a terrible trap, the price of which would be I wouldn't say the liquidation of the Western European labor movement or the Japanese labor movement, because in Japan the things are developing now with a certain delay along parallel lines, but it would be a tremendous defeat which would let the working class movement to restart its struggle on a much lower scale, on a much lower base, if it would go through this defeat. For us, it is obvious that we do not accept this kind of dilemma, that we see a third factor, a third possibility in the alternative as it is presented today in the capitalist, in the imperialist countries, that there is the possibility of a socialist answer to the threat of American colonization, that a socialist United States of Europe, that a socialist Europe, a socialist transformation of society would increase the possibilities of preventing American capitalism, of swallowing up a Western European economy in a tremendous way, and would in reality be a much stronger, a much more efficient, and a much more serious answer to this défi américain than is the belated attempt of the Western European imperialist powers to combine amongst themselves in order to oppose some form of efficient resistance to American colonization. I would like only to give one example in this connection, one example not from the economic field, not from the directly economic field, but from a marginal, what some people still think to be a marginal field, although it is not marginal at all, it's a key factor. You will have noticed, Wilson has used that argument over and over again, in Britain too, we know with what lamentable practical result. You will have noticed that is in this competition between American imperialism and the capitalist countries of Western Europe and Japan, technologic development and therefore the development of higher education, technological education, has played a very important role. The argument has been made, many studies have been made on this field, the European Organization for Economic Cooperation, which is now and has now become an Atlantic organization, has even sent three wise men to the United States to examine all the gimmicks and all the reasons used by American capitalism for having a higher growth rate of science and technology than Western Europe. When all is set, and all that is set is not so unfavorable for European capitalism as it appears in some press reports, but when all is set on that field, you stand before a basic fact. And it is sufficient to see this basic fact in order to understand the tremendous transformation which a victory of socialism, which a conquest of power by the working class movement in Western Europe would operate on that field. You see the fact that whereas in the United States you have something like 15%, I think this is more or less the figure quoted by most of the specialists, you have something like 15% of the sons and daughters of the working class and the white collar workers have access to higher education. In Western Europe, you have an average of 5 or 6% of the sons and daughters of the working class who have access to higher education. And one of the main purposes, one of the main results of a socialist revolution in Western Europe would be, as it has been, because there it has had tremendous effects, as it has been in the Soviet Union and in some other worker states of Eastern Europe, one of the immediate results of a socialist revolution in Western Europe would be to increase that percentage in a tremendous way from 5 to 25 to 30 to 35 within one generation. I think in the Soviet Union it is more or less around this figure now, between 25 and 30%, and that under conditions of initial poverty which are incomparable to those of Western Europe. Once you have there, you can tap this tremendous force of productivity and of scientific development, which is today wasted and destroyed by the capitalist system of education, of class education in the West. You can see how the relationship of forces between a socialist Europe and capitalist America could be transformed very quickly, precisely in that field, which is today by so many bourgeois specialists considered the key field for future economic development in itself. This being said, I would like to come now to three concrete problems posed by the general problem of a global anti-imperialist strategy in the imperialist countries themselves, and especially, of course, in the imperialist countries of Western Europe. The first problem is to try to give a more concrete answer to the question, how can we develop in an efficient way the anti-imperialist struggles in our own countries? How can we lead them to a higher level? One aspect of this problem has already been stressed during the last months in several Western European countries, in several imperialist countries. This is to concentrate on the fight against NATO. This is not a general, theoretical, and abstract problem. It is very easy to demonstrate in a concrete way that the military organization of the Atlantic Pact, that the military organization of NATO is a direct support, a direct infrastructural support for all the counter-revolutionary wars and interventions made by American imperialism and by various European imperialist powers against revolutionary movements in the semi-colonial countries in several corners of the earth. I do not want to go into this in detail. I think the question is obvious, and the conscious attempt made by several radical tendencies of the radical anti-imperialist movement in Western Europe, to combine the struggle of defense of the Vietnamese revolution with the struggle against NATO is absolutely correct and must be developed further in the coming weeks, months, and if necessary, years. And I want to insist more specifically on the concrete problem of the escalation of the anti-imperialist struggle in relation with the defense of the Vietnam Revolution. In this question, we are faced with two parallel incorrect propositions. There is, at the one hand, those who say the only efficient way to help the Vietnamese revolution is to make revolution in our own countries.